It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, hello. Hello, everyone. This is your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio, the Second Amendment radio show. You can always go to 2aradio.com. I want to start off today with something a little humorous. Now, I have no idea if any of this is true. In fact, I would probably guess that none of it is true. But it was still a good read. My mother, in fact, forwarded this to me. It says a D.C. airport ticket agent offers some examples of why our country is in trouble. Just some stories from this alleged D.C. ticket agent. Again, we have no idea if any of this is true or not. But number one, it says, I had a New Hampshire congresswoman, Carol Shea Porter, ask for an aisle seat so that her hair wouldn't get messed up by being near the window on an airplane as though it rolls down. Number two, I got a call from a Kansas Congressman Moore, his staffer by the name of Howard Balecki, who wanted to go to Cape Town. I started to explain the length of the flight and the passport information, and he interrupted me with, I'm not trying to make you look stupid, but Cape Town is in Massachusetts. Without trying to make him look stupid, I calmly explained, Cape Cod is in Massachusetts. Cape Town is in South Africa. His response? Click. Hung up on her. Let's see, number three. A senior Vermont congressman, Bernie Sanders, called furious about a Florida package we did. I asked what was wrong with the vacation in Orlando. He said he was expecting an ocean view room. I tried to explain to him that's not possible since Orlando's in the middle of the state. He replied, don't lie to me. I looked at a map of Florida and it's a thin state. Really? Number four, I got a call from a lawmaker's wife, Laura Reed, wife of Harry Reed here of Nevada, who asked, is it possible to see England from Canada? My response was no. She said, but they look so close on the map. Again, I really kind of doubt these are true. They're just funny. Again, it's why would you call a ticket agent if your vacation package in Florida didn't work out? It wouldn't happen. Let's see, an aide for cabinet member Janet Napolitano. Once called and asked if he could rent a car in Dallas. I pulled up the reservation and noticed he had only a 1 hour overlay in Dallas. When I asked him why he wanted to rent a car, he said, I heard Dallas was a big airport and we'll need a car to drive between gates to save time. God, I hope not. Number six, an Illinois congresswoman, Jan Schakowsky, called last week. She needed to know how it was possible that her flight from Detroit left at 8:30 a.m. and got to Chicago at 8:33 a.m. I explained that Michigan was an hour ahead of Illinois, but she couldn't understand the concept of time zones. Finally, I told her that the plane went fast, and she bought that. Number seven, a New York lawmaker, Gerald Nadler, called and asked, quote, do airlines put your physical description on your bag so they know whose luggage belongs to whom? I said, no. Why do you ask? He replied, well, when I checked in with the airline, they put a tag on my luggage that said fat and I'm overweight. I think that's very rude. After putting him on hold for a minute, I looked into it. I was dying laughing. I came back and explained to him that the code for Fresno, California is FAT, Fresno Air Terminal. And the airline was just putting a destination on his luggage. Number eight, Senator John Kerry's aide, Lindsey Ross, called to inquire about a trip package to Hawaii. After going over all the cost info, she asked, would it be cheaper to fly to California and then take the train to Hawaii? Seriously? Number nine, I got off the phone with a freshman congressman, Bobby Bright from Alabama, who asked, how do I know which plane to get on? Well, if you were from some state other than Alabama, I might be able to understand that. I asked him what exactly he meant, to which he replied, I was told my flight number is 823, but none of these planes have numbers on them. Number 10, Senator Dianne Feinstein called and said, I need to fly to Pepsi-Cola, Florida. Do I have to get one of those little computer planes? I asked if she meant to go to Pensacola, Florida, on a commuter plane. She said, yeah, whatever, smarty. Pepsi-Cola, Florida, computer planes. Great. Let's see. Mary Landreau, Louisiana senator, called and had a question about the document she needed in order to fly to China. After a lengthy discussion about passports, I reminded her that she needed a visa. Oh, no, I don't. I've been to China many times and have never had to have one of those. I double-checked, and sure enough, her stay required a visa. When I told her this, she said, look, I've been to China 4 times, and every time they have accepted my American Express. A New Jersey congressman of John Adler, called to make reservations. I want to go from Chicago to Rhino, New York. I was at a loss for words. Finally said, are you sure that's the name of the town? Yeah. What flights do you have? Replied the man. After some searching, I came back with, I'm sorry, sir. I've looked up every airport code in the country, and I can't find a Rhino anywhere. The man retorted, oh, don't be silly. Everyone knows where it is. Check your map. So I scoured the map of the state of New York and finally offered, you don't mean Buffalo, do you? The reply, whatever. I knew it was a big animal. Could anyone be this dumb? Yes, they walk among us, and they are in politics running this country. Again, I have serious reservations as to whether any of this is true, but it is a good slam. And if you notice, everybody involved is a Democrat. So I have a feeling that there is a few dumb Republicans out there and maybe even a few dumb independents, but only the stories about the Democrats are in this story. And it was good, and I thank my mother for sending that off. She lives up in the great state of Oregon. Unfortunately, she lives on the west half of the Cascades, where it's incredibly liberal, as opposed to the eastern half, where it is much more conservative. And my mother is very conservative-minded, so good on you, Mom. Thanks for doing that. That was I hope everybody enjoyed that. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the House and how it is tackling the Obamacare law and doing their own sort of an internal repeal of sorts, as all funding measures are part of the House. So we're going to talk about that after the break. And keep in mind, Obamacare is important because if your medical information gets out there and is public information, the doctors look at it and they find any reason that you might be mentally unstable, they take away your gun rights. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about that after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back, everyone. Now, the way things work in the House of Representatives is that they handle all of the funding bills. All the funding bills must start in the House. It basically, just about any other bill can start in either House, either the House or the Senate. They can start in either chamber and then go through the other and from there become law. But all spending measures start in the House. And what generally happens is the fiscal year in the United States for the federal government starts October 1st and goes through September 30th. And usually what they do is they pass an annual budget. Well, more and more commonly, that annual budget is no longer being passed. They're doing stopgap measures like, okay, we'll fund it for the next few weeks, but we need to address the rest of this. Or we're going to fund it for the next, know, 20 days, but we're going to have to address some of this. Well, they've been doing temporary spending measures since September 30th. Well, Friday before last, the House tacked defunding of the anti-gun Obama law onto the continuing resolution of the budget, which is required to fund the federal government through September 30th. In a series of four different votes, this is what the House approved. An amendment offered by Representative Denny Rehberg, which is he's a Republican out of Montana, to defund Obamacare for the next 6 months, as well as two amendments sponsored by Representative Stephen King, Republican out of Iowa, to defund previously appropriated provisions of Obamacare, and an amendment offered by Representative Joanne Emerson, Republican out of Missouri, to defund IRS implementation of the individual mandate, which is the Obamacare requirement that forces Americans to cough up their medical information, which could later be used by the FBI to block gun purchases and forces them to buy government-approved insurance. In addition, the House, by a sizable majority, adopted the Boren-Rehberg Amendment to defund ATF's efforts to create a new gun registry for many multiple gun sales. And Representative Dan Born is a Democrat from Oklahoma. He was one of the co-sponsors of that. And just so you understand about this, Gun Owners of America actually contacted every member of the House of Representatives prior to the vote on the Boren-Rehberg Amendment. This is an important provision that will stop the ATF's attempts to illegally register gun owners. That's where if you buy more than one rifle of a certain style of caliber, semi-automatic rifle above .22, within a five-day period, that would require that the gun dealer, the FFL holder, if you live in a border state, to send that information to the ATF, which is then a backdoor registration. Since last year, the ATF has been trying to require licensed firearms dealers in those border states to report to the government the sale of two or more semi-automatic rifles that are, again, .22 caliber or greater. They can accept a detachable magazine that are purchased by the same person within five business days. Now, I don't know how they would know this if you bought it from different gun dealers. I think that would eliminate that. Anyhow, House actions last week put us in a position where 41 senators can force Democrats to either defund the anti-gun Obamacare plus ATF's unlawful gun registry or shut down the non-essential functions of the Obama administration, including the ATF. Shutting down the ATF would represent a boon for gun owners' rights. The fight to defang the ATF and repeal Obamacare are two top priorities of Americans. Given that there are 47 Republicans in the Senate, and 51 senators who purported to oppose Obamacare's mandate that you buy insurance that you don't want, you wouldn't think that defunding Obamacare and the ATF would be an imminent winnable fight, right? Well, let's hope so. Because you can be sure of this. If the shoe were on the other foot, Senator Barack Obama in 2008 would not have shied away from shutting down the non-essential functions of the Bush administration in order to get his way. Heck no. The good news is that we now have the vehicle to kill Obamacare and the ATF's unlawful multiple sales registry if we just have the will to do so. So, get a hold of your senators, let them know that you would like this to be passed, because it's going to be coming up for a vote in the Senate in no time. Now, speaking of Obama, we're talking about the guy that has spent more money than I think every other president combined, almost. This is the same guy who wanted to, how do we put this, lambasted the Bush administration during the actual time that the Senate and the House were both controlled by the Democrats, during that same time. But yet, he wanted to lambast the Bush administration for spending too much money. You got this? I'm trying to find the quote here. I'm sorry, guys. I'm vamping here while I'm trying to find the quote that I have in my notes from Obama dealing with that. So I'm sure I'll find it during the break, which is going to be coming up in another few minutes here. Anyhow, what it basically boils down to is we have a president who is still has in the Department of Treasury hundreds of billions of unspent dollars that came through the stimulus package. And they still have control of these hundreds of billions of unspent dollars, which should go right back to where they came from, the people we borrowed them from. Here it is here, Obamanomics. In 2006, Senator Barack Obama had this to say about the debt crisis facing the nation. He says, quote, "The fact that we are here today to debate raising America's debt limit is a sign of leadership failure. Washington is shifting the burden of bad choices today onto the backs of our children and grandchildren." Okay. Well, today, Obama's making that same choice, fighting tooth and nail to persuade Republicans in the House to raise the debt limit above the $14.3 trillion we're already at, a sum representing nearly 100% of the nation's gross domestic product and more than 14% of the entire world's wealth. Even more disturbing to the leader of the campaign to get Republicans to use their power in the House to deny more borrowing by the federal government is that the GOP's leadership is poised to agree and do it. Barack Obama isn't right often, but he's right. He was right in 2006 when he opposed raising the debt limit. This is according to WND's Joseph Farah. He says, "No more red ink," is the campaign. "Suddenly raising the debt limit is a good idea to him so he can fund his socialized medicine program, continue his wealth redistribution schemes, and take over more failing companies, as well as fund more failed stimulus programs, subsidize his state-sponsored media outlets, pour more waste and counterproductive dollars into unconstitutional departments and agencies, pay for abortions through Planned Parenthood, and create more czardism. Republicans can pull the plug on Obama's entire socialist agenda with one key vote in opposition to raising the debt limit, and you can provide House Republicans with the backbone they need to do this in the next few weeks by contacting your representatives." Keep in mind, here's the deal. Obamacare goes through. Everybody's medical information ends up in a national database. If for any reason any doctor, who's going to be under government control for the most part, deems that you might have some sort of small psychological tick, that's going to go into the database. The database is going to go to the FBI, and the FBI, through the NICS check, is going to deny your ability to own a gun. Then they're going to come to your house, and they're going to take any guns that you already have. You think it wouldn't happen? When Stalin himself said, I believe it was Stalin, the key to taking over the populace is starting with government-run healthcare. Stay tuned. More to come after the break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. In New Haven, Connecticut, the police are rallying against layoffs, and one of their union leaders is suggesting that residents take up arms. Listen to this. New Haven police officers are letting Mayor John DeStefano, know that they're not happy with the recent layoffs. About 16 police officers were laid off last Wednesday night. More layoffs are expected as the city tries to deal with a multi-million dollar deficit. With their lights flashing and their sirens blaring, the police officers drove up to City Hall, got out of their vehicles, and started chanting, "Bring them back! Bring them back!" They were also calling for DeStefano to come out. Now, this is their boss. This is the way things work. When you have a city The mayor and the city council hires the police chief. The police chief works for the city council and the mayor specifically. The police work for the police chief. So the mayor is in their direct chain of command at the very top of the chain of command. Now, these cops who are on duty and supposed to be out there doing their jobs have their lights and sirens on and flashing, which is, unless there's what's called a priority zero call, you can't do. That's a violation, probably not only of policy, but I would imagine Connecticut state law. And then they're standing there calling out their boss to come out. Pictures sent to WTNH-TV via the station's Report It feature show some of the police officers marching through the city streets from the police station to City Hall. Another report, another photo shows the police officers blocking traffic on Church Street. What would happen if standard citizens were blocking traffic for their own little impromptu march? Well, the cops would cite and probably arrest several of them. Angelo Muriello was one of the police officers who found out last night that he had turned in his gun and badge today at 10 a.m. This is a few days old. You work so hard, it's not easy doing this job. Then you get a phone call, and it's sad to hear, he says. News of the layoffs came came just as police were responding to a double shooting at a Dunkin' Donuts on Derby Avenue. Okay, insert funny cop donut joke here. If there's a double shooting at Dunkin' Donuts, the cops had to have already been there. I mean, why would they respond there? I mean, it's a donut shop, right? I remember when I was a cop in Vegas. One day a week, I rode with a partner because it was double squad day. We worked 4 10-hour shifts. And so one day a week, our shift and the other shift worked the same day. It's on this one particular shift, it happened to be on Saturday. It was our last day on. It was their first day on. So I'm riding with this guy, good dude. And he asked me if I want to grab, you know, something to snack on for breakfast. Yeah, sure, no problem. He starts driving to a Wenchel's drive-thru. And I told him, absolutely not. If you dare put this marked black and white unit through a drive-thru of a donut shop, I'll shoot you myself. I swear to God. I will take out my pepper spray and blast you in the eye, throw you in the back seat, and drive you over to the hospital to get your eyes washed out. We are not driving a marked unit through a donut shop. If you want to get donuts, we'll go over to the local Stab and Grab, and you can go in there and buy a box of donuts. We are not going through. And he, are you serious, man? Yeah, I am absolutely serious. Anyhow, continuing on with this story. Union President Sergeant Luis Calvedivieri, whatever, calls the layoffs a disgusting embarrassment and is suggesting that the city residents arm themselves to ensure order in spite of the depleted police force. Now, is it because the police force is getting trimmed down that now all of a sudden we need to arm ourselves? What a knee-jerk reaction. You should already be armed. You should already be armed and trained and have plenty of ammo. Because, as this double shooting at Dunkin' Donuts suggests, not only are the cops not there, they're only arriving to do reports, take pictures. If you were there and the shooting happened, you would have been shot or had to wait for the cops and hope that they show up on time, which isn't going to happen if they're not already there. Here's a quote. We have 5 shootings in 19 hours. It's dangerous in this city. It's dangerous for us. It's dangerous for the citizens. I don't know how you can say you're just going to lay off cops, says Anthony Zona, the treasurer of the New Haven Police Union. Well, if you can't afford something, you can't pay for it. And if the city needs to trim some fat, they need to trim some fat. Now, I am one to say that cops are one of the last areas where fat should be trimmed. But if you're going to trim the fat, you need to trim it in areas where the cops are fat. Not with the street cops. Usually with the guys that are sitting around on their backsides, well, ordering out for donuts and coffee. Also, non-essential areas. Here's a non-essential area for me. Traffic cops. Now, generally traffic cops are the guys scooting around on their motorcycles, right? Traffic cops do two things. They work tickets and accidents. And if there's not an accident, they're out there writing tickets. Setting up under the shade, holding their little radar gun. If you're not working an accident, then you should ought to not be sitting there writing tickets. There's some fat that can be trimmed. My opinion. Having been a cop. Having been there. If cops are sitting around shooting radar at stuff, that is part of law enforcement, not policing. Policing is completely different from law enforcement. What we have now is law enforcement. We have a story a little bit later. We're going to talk about law enforcement. So you can see exactly how different that is than actual policing. Okay, so this Anthony Zona, the treasurer of the New Haven Police Union, he says he also wonders if Police Chief Frank LeMond has been notably absent from this whole process. He says, quote, he should have been down here with us. He should have gotten ahead of this. He should have been supporting us. He should have gone to the mayor. You really think he has had no? You're an idiot if you think he's had nothing to do with this. Once at City Hall, union leaders went up to talk with DeStefano, the mayor, but no word yet on exactly what transpired. A 3 p.m. press conference by DeStefano said the total of 82 more city positions will be eliminated. The mayor also called Cavalieri's suggestion that residents arm themselves as irresponsible. Now, usually it's the mayor saying you need to arm yourselves and the cops saying, oh, that's irresponsible because that's our job. When the cops say arm yourselves and then the mayor says that's irresponsible, that's all it is a bunch of word games. Well, I don't want to agree with anybody, anything that the other side has to say. Guys, we should all arm ourselves. We should all be trained with those arms. We should have plenty of ammunition to run through those arms at all times. If not, you're really neglecting your duty as an American. You really are. Because once the fecal matter strikes the air conditioner at rapid velocity, from anything from civil unrest to, say, natural disaster, insert Hurricane Katrina here, where cops themselves in Louisiana were looting stores on duty in marked units. We need to be able to arm ourselves and be trained, be prepared, so that when something like that happens at the drop of a hat, we're ready. Stay tuned. We'll be right back right after these words.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
Take on anyone. I know that you
And welcome back from the break, everyone. Now, in Lawrence, New Hampshire, last couple stories out of New Hampshire, Mayor William Lantigua, why am I so bad with last name? I don't get it. Says he will no longer pay the legal bills for police officers who are being sued, including the bills for those officers involved in 9 brutality cases pending in the U.S. District Court. Now, finances are tough everywhere. And I got to tell you, the federal government, all they have to do is get a hold of the Federal Reserve and ask them to print some more money and get other countries to invest in that so there's some actual funds behind it, and they have free money. States don't have it quite so easily. Counties and cities don't have it that way at all. So when a city is facing budget shortfalls, they can't spend money they don't have. Okay? Now, in Lawrence, New Hampshire, again, William Lantigua, the mayor, says that over the past 3 years, the city has spent $1.2 million to defend officers in civil cases. That's $400,000 a year. Instead, the mayor says he will hold to the police union's contract, which says the city only has to pay the $5,000 retainer for patrolmen and $7,500 for a superior officer. Superior ranking officer, I would say. The mayor says the officers have 2 options when they're being sued. 1, use one of the 3 city attorneys, or 2, have their unions pay for the defense. He says, from day one, this should never have been allowed. We cannot continue to do business as usual, Lantigua says. But Lantigua has hired his own outside counsel to defend the city against a complaint filed by the patrolman's union with the state's Division of Labor Relations, of course. The 10-count complaint alleges Lantigua's decision to cut legal payment is, quote, designed to punish the union and its members for exercising their collective bargaining rights. Now, what the mayor's doing is he's going back to what the contract already says. The collective bargaining was already done. Patrolmen, quote, are currently faced with the prospect of having to finance their own legal defense and personally satisfy any adverse judgments potentially rendered against them, wrote Mark Esposito, the lawyer representing the patrolman. You're absolutely right, Mark, which is the way it's supposed to be. You can't just go out there and whip up on somebody, violating their rights well and above any legal authority you have as a cop, and expect just to walk away and have the city pay for it. Now, resolution of the legal payments issue is particularly time sensitive, as they say, as it is essential that the officers' rights are made clear so they may determine how best to proceed regarding the defense of lawsuits pending against them in federal court. If it made it to federal court, you've got some real big issues there in that town, and you need to retrain your cops. 9 of them, is that right? Did I read that properly earlier, that 9 cops are up on these? Wow. It's amazing to me the way that people look at things. Cops, when you're on duty, you are a government employee. You don't have any rights. Well, you have a power and authority. If you overstep your power and authority and you violate someone else's rights, you are now personally accountable. If you're not willing to accept that, then either don't go above your power and authority or don't go after the job. As I said many, many times, and many of you out there have commented, that yes, in fact, a huge percentage of police officers, so they weren't cops, they'd be locked up because they'd be criminals. There's a fine line between most cops and most criminals. A fine line. Not all of them, most of them. Let's see. A longstanding past practice and a city ordinance mandates that employees, including police officers, be indemnified against legal judgments pertaining to the performance of their duties to the maximum extent permitted by the law. Well, that contract is part of the law. It's a contract. It's a legal document. The organized labor of the police union negotiated it. So I don't know why he's arguing back. According to Lantigua's office, the mayor, the city paid $471,374 to Dwyer and Duddy, the legal firm used by the patrolman's union. $37,318 to McDonald and Associates, which represents the superior officers union in the fiscal year that ended last June. In the previous year, the city paid, Dwyer and Dudley $287,649 and McDonald and Associates $38,353. Well, talk about having a real different classification for the cops. They even have different legal firms. Now, the mayor has hired Philip Boyle, an attorney from the private Boston firm of Morgan, Brown, and Joy, to fight the union's complaint with the state. Last year, the city paid $53,186 to Morgan, Brown, and Joy. In many of the civil cases, the city, police department, police chief John Romero, and individuals' officers are named. The city recently settled one police brutality case, agreeing to pay $400,000 to the plaintiff, but admitted no wrongdoing. Isn't paying $400,000 to somebody who's suing you an admission of wrongdoing in itself? Especially when you would think it could be defended for far less than that. Six civil trials involving police officers were scheduled to go forward in the next 6 months, including one brutality case against Officer Ivan Resto, which is supposed to start this week in federal court. These cases have the potential to result in expensive judgments or settlements that could ultimately be paid for by taxpayers. City Councilor Daniel Rivera, chairman of the Budget Committee, said he was, quote, inclined to support the administration on this if it's going to save the city money. Rivera also said that the city struggled with budget cuts and layoffs last year. The police unions, quote, made no concessions to help the larger budgetary issue, and union leadership should know that. Again, like I was saying in a previous show, here's the last little quote from Rivera, the attorney there. There was an outrage over laying off police officers. Meanwhile, we were paying Cadillac prices for attorneys. Well, of course. Unions used to fight and struggle for equality. Now they fight for superiority. Now, I'm going to get to the story I talked about earlier in the show about a perfect example of the difference between law enforcement and police. Okay? Law enforcement enforces the laws. Police help the good citizens and try to keep the bad element away from the good, productive citizens. Here's an example of law enforcement. A Girl Scout troop in Georgia selling cookies last Wednesday must not have had enough badges of honor to gain the trust of police. Troop 7984 had set up shop at a strip mall when a police officer told the group to pack up their boxes and to get a peddler's permit. Literally, pack up your crap and get out of here, little girls. You're not selling without a permit. Now, that's law enforcement, enforcing a municipal code. Troop leader Kathy Crook says they had to turn away the customers who were ready to buy. There was a line of people there when the cops showed up and said, no, you can't do this. And all the rest of you have to leave, pack this stuff up, and go away. Or I'm going to cite you. One Girl Scout said that the girls were actually frightened of the cop. Quote, it was scaring us because we thought all the adults were going to go to jail. Now, the mayor said it was a veteran police officer who questioned the troop and that it was simply a misunderstanding. Really. To make amends, the city is offering the Girl Scouts a pizza party and a tour of the police department. It was a misunderstanding. It wasn't a misunderstanding. This overzealous cop, veteran of law enforcement, who has no idea what policing is all about. He's the one that jumped in there to enforce a one-year-old municipal code. Imagine that, guys. So if they're going to go to the police department and tour around, it'd probably be empty. They'd have to go to the law enforcement station for a tour. Unreal. Thanks for tuning in today, guys. We'll be back tomorrow.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.